The hat in question was owned by Mrs. Constance Lovestock. Mrs. Lovestock was a woman of some years, even greater means, and no children. She was not a woman who did things by half measures. Take her position on swans. She thought them the most beautiful, graceful creatures in the world.
"So graceful," she said, "so elegant."
When one approached her large and sumptuous house on the outskirts of Baltimore, one saw shrubbery cut to look like swans, statues of swans taking flight, fountains where a mother swan spat water at baby swans, a bird bath in the shape of a swan where lesser birds could have the honor of bathing. And, of course, actual swans gliding across the ponds that encircled the house, and sometimes waddling, not as graceful as one might have hoped, past ground floor windows.
"I do nothing," Mrs. Lovestock was proud of saying, "by half measure."
And so it was one night near the beginning of December, while sitting before the fire with her husband, Mr. Lovestock, who took a vacation by himself every summer, supposedly to collect beetles, but actually to hunt swans at a private reserve in Florida, blasting them at near point blank range with a mad grin on his face. So it was that Mrs. Lovestock sat up on the swan-shaped couch where she had been knitting and announced,
"Gerald, I'm going to adopt some children."
Mr. Lovestock took the pipe from his mouth and made a thoughtful sound. He had heard clearly enough what she said, not a child, rather some children. But long years had taught him the futility of direct confrontation with his wife. He decided it wisest to give up some ground with a combination of ignorance and flattery.
"Why, my dear, that is a fabulous idea. You'd make a wonderful mother. Yes, let's do adopt a child."
Mrs. Lovestock tutted sharply.
"Don't toy with me, Gerald. I have no intention of adopting just one child. It'd hardly be worth the effort. I think I shall begin with three."
Then she stood, indicating the discussion was over, and strode out of the room. Mr. Lovestock sighed, replacing the pipe in the corner of his mouth, and wondering if there was a place he could go in the summer to hunt children. Probably not, he thought, and went back to his paper.
"This is your last chance."
Kate sat across the desk from Miss Crumley. They were in her office in the North Tower of the Edgar Allan Poe Home for Hopeless and Incorrigible Orphans. The building had been an armory in centuries past, and in the winter the wind blew through the walls, rattling the windows and freezing the water in the toilets. Miss Crumley's office was the only room that was heated. Kate hoped whatever she had to say would take a long time.
"I'm not joking, young lady."
Miss Crumley was a short, lumpish woman with a mound of purplish hair, and as she spoke she unwrapped a piece of candy from a bowl on her desk. The candy was off-limits to children. On their arrival at the home, as Miss Crumley was explaining the list of do's and don'ts, mostly don'ts, Michael had helped himself to a peppermint. He'd had to take cold showers for a week afterward.
"She hadn't said not to eat them," he complained. "How was I supposed to know?"
Miss Crumley popped the candy in her mouth.
"After this, I'm done. Finished. If you and your brother and sister don't make yourselves as agreeable as possible so that this lady adopts you, well..."
She sucked hard on her candy, searching for a suitably terrifying threat.
"Well, I just won't be responsible for what happens."
"Who is she?" Kate asked.
"Who is she?"
Miss Crumley repeated, her eyes widening in disbelief. "I mean, what's she like?"
"Who is she? What's she like?"
Miss Crumley sucked violently, her outrage rising.
"This woman!"
She stopped. Kate waited. But no words came. Instead, Miss Crumley's face turned bright red. She made a gagging sound. For the briefest of seconds, well, perhaps more like 3 seconds, Kate considered watching Miss Crumley choke. Then she jumped up, ran around, and pounded her on the back. A gooey, greenish lump flew out of Miss Crumley's mouth and landed on the desk. She turned to Kate, breathing hard, her face still red. Kate knew better than to expect a thank you.
"She is," Miss Crumley gasped, "a woman interested in adopting 3 children, preferably a family. That is all you need know. Who is she? The nerve! Go find your brother and sister. Have them washed and in their best clothes. The lady will be here in an hour. And if either one of them does anything, so help me."
She picked up the candy and popped it back in her mouth.
"Well, I just won't be responsible."
As Kate descended the narrow spiral stairs from Miss Crumley's office, the air grew colder, and she drew her thin sweater more tightly around herself. Adults, seeing Kate for the first time, always took note of what a remarkably pretty girl she was, with her dark blonde hair and large hazel eyes. But if they looked closer, they saw the furrow of concentration that had taken up residence on her brow, the way her fingernails were bitten to the quick, the weary tension in her limbs, and rather than saying, "Oh, what a pretty girl," they would cluck and murmur, "The poor thing." For to look at Kate, pretty as she was to see someone who lived in constant anticipation of life's next blow. Leaving the side door of the orphanage, Kate saw a group of children gathered around a skeletal tree at the edge of the yard. A small girl with thin legs and short chestnut-coloured hair was throwing rocks at a boy in the branches, yelling at him to come down and fight. Kate pushed through the crowd of laughing, jeering children as Emma picked up another stone.
"What are you doing?"
Emma turned. There were red circles on her cheeks, and her dark eyes were bright.
"He ripped my book! I was just sitting there reading, and he grabbed my book and ripped it. I swear I didn't do anything, and now he won't even come down and fight." "It's not true," cried the boy in the tree. "She's crazy."
"Shut up,"
Emma yelled, and threw the rock. The boy ducked behind the tree as it bounced off the trunk. Emma was small for 11, all knees and elbows, but every child in the orphanage respected and feared her temper. When cornered or aroused, she would fight like a devil, kicking and scratching and biting. Kate sometimes wondered whether her sister would have been as fierce if they'd never been separated from their parents. Emma was the only one who had no memory of their mother and father. Even Michael had hazy recollections of being cared for and loved. As far as Emma was concerned, this was the only life she had ever known, and it had one rule. When you stopped fighting, you were finished. Unfortunately, there were always a few older boys who went out of their way to rile her, relishing the way Emma worked herself into a fury. Their favorite target, not surprisingly, was the children's single-letter surname. Since Kate was the oldest, at 14, it was usually her job to calm her sister down.
"We'll have to find Michael," Kate said. "There's a woman coming to see us."
A hush fell over the children. There had not been a prospective parent at the Edgar Allan Poe Home for Hopeless and Incorrigible Orphans in months.
"I don't care," Emma said. "I'm not going."
"She'd have to be a loon to want you,"
called the boy in the tree. Emma seized a rock and winged it. The boy wasn't quick enough, and it caught him on the elbow.
"Ow!"
"Emma," Kate took her sister's arm. "Miss Crumley says this is our last chance."
Emma pulled herself free. She stooped and picked up another rock. But it was clear the fight had gone out of her, and Kate waited quietly as Emma tossed the rock from hand to hand, then threw it weakly against the tree.
"Fine. Do you know where Michael is?"
Emma nodded. Kate took her hand, and the children parted so they could pass.